Coming up, as anticipation builds for the visit of Pope Francis, Kim Lawton reports on the beliefs that undergird what Francis will be saying and doing.
He's a walking, talking parable.
Also, Kim and I talk about the Pope and his messages with two experts on Catholicism. Plus, a 1,000-mile march for racial justice.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Welcome. I'm Bob Abernethy. It's good to have you with us. Pope Francis says he holds great hope for his upcoming visit to the U.S. He asked Catholics around the world to join him in prayer. Francis arrives here Tuesday after spending 3 days in Cuba. Hundreds of thousands are expected to attend his various public events in Washington, New York, and Philadelphia. Many Catholic and non-Catholic groups have planned special service projects, rallies, and vigils to coincide with the visit. More on Francis, his beliefs, and the expectations for his trip later. In Europe, Hungarian police clashed with migrants and refugees. The police used tear gas and water cannons to keep the migrants from entering Hungary from Serbia. Hungary has erected a metal fence along its border with Serbia, claiming the migrants pose a threat to the country. UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon said he was alarmed by Hungary's treatment of the migrants. Here at home, President Obama said the U.S. would take in at least 10,000 Syrian refugees in the coming fiscal year. However, a wide range of faith groups said that plan is woefully insufficient. Several humanitarian groups are urging the U.S. to increase its intake to 200,000, including 100,000 Syrians. Immigration was one of the main issues as the Republican presidential candidates met for their second debate. Outside, protesters denounced recent anti-immigrant statements by frontrunner Donald Trump. Several religious leaders have also raised concerns about Trump's rhetoric on the issue. Also this week, Democratic presidential candidates took their campaigns to people of faith. In Lynchburg, Virginia, Senator Bernie Sanders spoke at the conservative Evangelical Liberty University. Sanders acknowledged disagreements between him and evangelicals on abortion and gay marriage, but he said other moral issues deserve attention too, including poverty. Sanders said he was guided by the religious teaching to do unto others what you would have them do unto you, the Golden Rule. In Washington, Democratic candidate Hillary Clinton spoke at Foundry United Methodist Church to mark the church's 200th anniversary. The Clinton family attended Foundry during Bill Clinton's presidency. Ms. Clinton said she was a Methodist, quote, by birth and by choice. She spoke of the faith she learned from her mother, who often quoted John Wesley, a founder of Methodism.
Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can.
Faith groups were among those expressing support for 14-year-old Ahmed Mohammed of Irving, Texas. The high schooler was handcuffed and arrested after his teacher mistook a clock he had made for a bomb. The school has drawn criticism, with many saying Mohammed was a victim of racial and religious profiling. The Muslim Public Affairs Council was among the groups using the I Stand With Ahmed hashtag on Twitter. President Obama invited Mohammed to bring his clock to the White House. Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby has called top leaders of the Worldwide Anglican Communion to a January meeting to discuss loosening ties between the Communion's regional churches. In recent years, the 80-million-member Communion has been racked with tensions. Conservative Anglican churches in the global South have been upset with Western churches, especially the U.S. Episcopal Church, over issues such as homosexuality. Welby wants to see if there's a way Anglican churches could hold different views without completely splitting the communion. Now, the visit of Pope Francis. People around the world will be closely watching Francis's travels, first to Cuba, then to the U.S. Today, Kim Lawton has a special report on the beliefs that undergird what Francis will be saying and doing.
This is St. Maria's Meals, a project of Catholic Charities in the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. Every week, St. Maria's Meals feeds an average of 300 people on the street. Most of them are homeless. Immediately after addressing a joint session of Congress next Thursday, Pope Francis will come here to meet with Catholic Charities clients and see St. Maria's Meals in action.
This is who he is. He's a man of the poor. He's going to go to the most powerful place maybe in our country, Congress, and he's going to leave there. And before he leaves this city, he's going to say, let me go back with my people.
In all his foreign trips, in addition to meeting with state dignitaries and religious leaders, Francis has made it a point to schedule significant time to visit poor and marginalized people. Here in the U.S., he'll also be visiting immigrant families and prisoners.
Why does he do that? It's what we find in the scriptures consistently. In the Old Testament is always God sending the prophets and speaking a voice for the orphans, the widows, those who are poor, those who are disenfranchised. In the New Testament, we find that Jesus not only does that, but he says, as long as you do it for one of the least of my brothers or sisters, you have done it for me.
John Carr is director of the Initiative on Catholic Social Thought and Public Life at Georgetown University. He says Francis is simply living out his faith.
In some ways, the most powerful things about his message is not what he says, but what he does and who he meets with. He is a walking, talking parable.
Francis's actions and several of his recent high-profile statements on controversial issues have led some observers to characterize him as political and radical. But many U.S. Catholic leaders argue that it would be a mistake to view Francis solely through a political lens. They say Francis is embodying foundational Roman Catholic beliefs, beliefs that come from the scriptures and from the church's social teaching. Father John Ensler, director of Catholic Charities in D.C., says the Pope's emphasis on poor people, immigrants, and refugees flows directly from the major principles outlined in Catholic teaching about achieving social justice.
You give a preferential option to the poor. They have a preference. Now, I mean, I will tell you, I don't think I live that so well. The Pope seems to say, let's work on that. Get out in the streets. Let's work on that. Make a difference.
Catholic social thought begins with the life and dignity of the human person.
Carr says that concern for people was evident in Francis's recent encyclical on the environment.
We treat people as things. We treat creation as something we can exploit. And he comes with a different message, that every person is precious and that the environment, climate, the earth is a gift, not something to exploit.
Catholic analysts affirm the beliefs that undergird Francis's actions are no different than those of his predecessors.
He's getting the message of the Catholic Church back to its most basic roots.
But what is different is the perspective he brings from his own background and experience.
His ministry was not in Poland, a communist country like John Paul II. He did not do his work at the university or in the Vatican like Pope Benedict. He was a pastor in a third world country. He's the grandson of immigrants. So he brings a different view. While the message is the same, the urgency, the priority is different.
Some Catholics, including some high-ranking Catholics, disagree with how Francis has been applying church teachings. Several U.S. conservatives have raised concerns about the Pope's recent economic statements, especially his criticism of unfettered capitalism. When asked about the controversy, Francis said he wanted to read up on it more before his U.S. trip. New Orleans Archbishop Gregory Amon says Francis's economic views are based on the church teaching that every person deserves opportunities for a good quality of life.
There is an unfair distribution in the world of the riches and the goods of the world, and he's calling us to task and saying, how do we distribute this differently? And that's a valid question, certainly for us in the United States and in many, many other countries, that it's a very small number of people who own everything and control everything, and very often the poor are not really considered.
Amon doesn't see Francis backing away from that.
The message is not popular, but it's a message that comes from the scriptures. It's a message he believes in, and I don't think that there's any possibility that he's going to let go of that.
Many American Catholics will also be watching to see how Francis addresses controversial social issues like gay marriage and abortion. Some conservatives are disappointed that he hasn't been more outspoken about them. Carr says, once again, Francis has a different approach.
The best way to describe Pope Francis' efforts around human life, around the family, is no obsession. It's not the only thing he cares about, but no retreat. He says he's a child of the church.
He's a welcoming spirit and says that we as church need to open our hearts and our lives to all people. Sometimes people misunderstand that and say, well, that means we have to compromise who we are or what we believe in. And we don't. We are Catholics and we believe in the scriptures, we believe in the Catholic teaching.
According to McGuire of the Catholic Association, the life issues are part of Francis's comprehensive view of human dignity.
In the same breath, same sentence, almost every single time he brings up the issue, he talks about the unborn, the elderly, the poor, and the disabled. And so he's talking about the margins of society and that these are all people who are marginalized in different ways.
Carr says, like Catholic social teaching itself, Francis doesn't fall into neat political categories.
He will make everyone uncomfortable if you listen carefully. I can't wait to see him in front of the Congress. I think there will be moments when everyone feels affirmed and everyone feels challenged. So for him, this is not an ideology. This is the gospel at work.
McGuire says younger Catholics especially resonate with Francis's call to meet people where they are.
People grew up in broken homes. Probably all of us know somebody who's had an abortion. We all have gay friends. And so I think his message is to literally walk alongside those people. And I think that's something that millennials get. Because we know that often the best way to bring the joy of the gospel, the message of Christianity to people, is to be their friend.
Amon says on issues from the environment to poverty, Francis is challenging all Catholics, including him, to be more intentional about living out their beliefs.
When I saw all that he was doing, I must admit that I had to look into my own conscience and say, am I spending enough time with the poor, the prisoners, the street people? Do they have a priority in my ministry? His example speaks loudly.
And given the excitement surrounding his visit, that example will be front and center well beyond the coming week. I'm Kim Lawton reporting.
We want to follow Kim's story with more on the messages Pope Francis could bring. Kim is here, and so is Tom Roberts, a former editor and now editor-at-large of National Catholic Reporter. Also, Stephen Schneck is director of the Institute for Policy Research and Catholic Studies at the Catholic University of America. Welcome to you all. Steve, what do you think the Pope wants to accomplish? What is at the top of his agenda in answer to the question, why is he coming?
Well, I think, first of all, he's coming as a pastor. We can't forget that. But, you know, I suspect that what he'll do when he's here is he's going to use the occasion, I think, to prick the American conscience. I think that he's going to reach out and try to call America to realize that with all of our blessings come responsibilities. And I think that he's going to call us to recognize the moral dimension of those responsibilities.
On any specific issues? Yes, a lot of specific
issues. So, for example, I'm sure he'll be talking about immigration. At all three of the venues, I think that he'll be talking about care for creation. I also expect him to talk about life issues, And as well, he'll be talking about poverty, about mass incarceration. I mean, the range of issues is actually quite large.
Kim?
Well, we're in this interesting situation where he's coming as a pastor, but so much, especially in Washington, are these political spots where, and we have the situation where a few years ago, Americans were uncomfortable with a Catholic president because they thought the Pope would be too influential. Now we're begging to have him speak to the joint sessions of Congress. Is there a danger, Tom, that there may be some political exploitation going on here?
Well, I don't think there's the danger of that happening on the Pope's part. He's speaking very bluntly, and he was invited, and there he is. I think that it will be dangerous for either party to try to play politics off of what he says. But he brings a really, I think, interesting newness to the religious conversation, especially as politics goes, because he's making a lot of Americans uncomfortable. He talks about global economics in very blunt ways and from the perspective of the poor. And he here is in the seat of the global center, global central. And I think that he's going to unsettle people on all sides of the issues.
Absolutely.
And you've said, Tom, that he sees the whole world from a perspective different from that most of the rest of us have.
I think so, especially as a pope. He doesn't come from, Germany or Poland. He doesn't come from the academy. He wasn't, he wasn't part of the Curia in Rome. And I think you can't overstate how influential his years in the slums of Buenos Aires has been as a formation for this. That's what he knew. They're the Catholics he knew. So they weren't scrubbed-up families going to Mass every Sunday morning. He ran into broken lives, and he saw the results of poverty and marginalization, and also the results of global economics on the poorest. And so that's his lens, and he understands the world that way. And I think that's a powerful motivator for him.
Yes. But how does that challenge him then, coming to an audience here where there are scrubbed-up Catholics going to Mass on Sunday? What is his challenge speaking to an American audience?
I think, Kim, what he's trying to do is wake those scrubbed-up Catholics up, wake them up to recognize that there are people on the margins and that, in fact, we're called as Christians to look at our life and to understand our world from the perspective of those margins. And I think that's why he's so powerful. I think that's why his charisma is just so magical.
I heard it said, it was a nice way to put it, that the words are the same, but the music's changed. And in a sense, that's true, but it's more than that. I mean, he's changed the optics, if you will, of what it means to be a pope. So the statements about poverty are all over our papal documents for a long, long time. But
and the Gospels.
And the Gospels, right. So he's speaking out of the heart of the Gospel. But it's tough to talk about the poor from a place called the Papal Palace. And he's just changed that in his actions. He's got authenticity on his side.
Steve, is there a danger here that we're expecting too much of the Pope? Are things really going to change because he's come?
In the last couple of days, I've actually started to have a little bit of that worry that the here in Washington, the frothiness about the papal visit is just astonishing. We were talking actually before we came on camera about how hard it is to get tickets to many of these events. So I am a little bit worried that maybe we are setting our expectations awfully high. But on the other hand, I'm utterly convinced of the authenticity of this pope. And I think that if anybody can be a catalyst for the transformation of the world's soul, I think that it's this person.
Kim, in your piece, you spoke with someone who said that what he was or she was going to be looking for was more what he did on these private visits to Catholic charities, to a prison, that sort of thing, than to what he's going to be saying to Congress and the UN.
And I've heard that over and over again, that he speaks loudest through what he does, through these gestures. And, people talked about John Paul II of being that master on stage, but Francis really seems to be the master of the gesture. And I'm not saying that that's not authentic for him, but just these actions that he takes, and especially with real people, with disadvantaged people, I think, and being in a visual world, we see those images, and those images carry power, and they seem to really be touching people.
If I could, though, emphasize just how authentic that is, when you see this pope interacting with everyday people, particularly with people on the margins, and I'd love, for example, to be at his visit to Catholic Charities here in Washington or to the prison in Philadelphia, but when you see him in those situations, I mean, he's just almost aglow. I mean, it is really a spiritual experience when you see this man in those situations. So, I think he is the master of the gesture, but I think that I think that's all genuinely authentic all the way down.
Yeah. Quickly, where would you like to be when he's here?
Where are you going to be able to get to?
Well, I'm told I'm going to be able to be at St. Matthew's Cathedral when he meets with the U.S. bishops. But I think I'd like to be, I'd like to be at Catholic Charities or in the prison, because I think that you don't fake what he's doing in those circumstances. And that's, I think, where the authenticity really rings true.
I'm afraid our time is up. Our thanks to Kim Lawton, the managing editor of this program, to Stephen Schneck of Catholic University, and to Tom Roberts of the National Catholic Reporter. Everett Parker died this past week. He was a United Church of Christ minister who fought long and successfully for the rights of everyone, especially minorities, to have access to broadcast airwaves. He was 102 years old. On our calendar this week, Jews around the world continue observing the holiest time of their year, which began with Rosh Hashanah, the new year. The High Holy Days conclude Wednesday with Yom Kippur, the Day of Atonement. And an estimated 2 million Muslims are expected in Mecca for the annual Hajj, or pilgrimage, despite last week's fatal crane accident at the Grand Mosque. The Hajj ends this week with the three-day festival of Eid al-Adha, the Feast of Sacrifice. It recalls Abraham's willingness to sacrifice his son in obedience to God. Finally, this year marks the 50th anniversary of several key milestones in the civil rights movement, including the march from Selma to Montgomery, Alabama, and the signing of the Voting Rights Act. Today, many activists say they're worried about the status of some of the rights the movement fought for. Last month, the NAACP launched America's Journey for Justice, a 1,000-mile march from Selma to Washington, D.C. The march arrived in Washington Tuesday. NAACP President Cornell Brooks says the group is particularly concerned that a recent Supreme Court decision has hindered access to the polls for minorities and disadvantaged people.
We're trying to convey to the folks that the right to vote is a civic sacrament, and the voting booth is, in fact, the altar of our democracy. And for us to allow voter disenfranchisement and suppression to go on is a desecration of both.
There was significant religious involvement in the project. Many faith leaders marched on various legs of the trip. Along the way, group members frequently stayed overnight in churches and synagogues and held rallies there. The marchers also carried a Torah for the entire 1,000 miles. Brooks said the religious participation was reminiscent of the involvement of churches and other faith groups 50 years ago.
We didn't have legions and armies of lobbyists. We didn't have campaign cash to swirl around. We had prayers. We had the dedication of our people. We had a certain kind of civic creativity and ingenuity. And we had faith. Faith in our God, faith in our people, faith in our country. And in 2015, those are the same things we're relying upon.
Rabbi Bruce Lustig, senior rabbi at the Washington Hebrew Congregation, walked 40 miles with the group in Alabama and invited the marchers to an interfaith service at his synagogue.
We care about each other, and I think that what's symbolic about this march is that it was through states and it was with the common people. It wasn't about politicians in Washington. It was about making real justice for every American.
Ann Brooks says he's hopeful the march will make a difference in people's lives.
We don't hope because it makes sense to hope. We don't hope because it's a matter of emotional calculus. We hope because our faith tells us we have to hope, and unless we hope, we perish. And so we have to be hopeful. We have to believe.
That's our program for now. I'm Bob Abernethy. You can follow us on Twitter and Facebook and watch us anytime on the PBS app for iPhones and iPads. There's also much more on our website where you can listen to or watch every program. Join us at pbs.org. As we leave you, more music from the Journey for Justice Interfaith Service in Washington.
Major funding for Religion and Ethics News Weekly is provided by the Lilly Endowment, an Indianapolis-based private family foundation dedicated to its founders' interest in religion, community development, and education. Additional funding also provided by Mutual of America, designing customized individual and group retirement products. That's why we're your retirement company.
Be more. PBS.